Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
Hello, there you go. It's 58 minutes past the hour, now 59 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown. 59 minutes past the hour, and now it's time for Homegrown, your show about local art. The only show in Charlottesville dedicated to local art, brought to you by us, with your hosts, David Von Strong and Clinton Johnston. Now, here's Clinton and David.
Hey!
What's up?
Hello. Hello. We lost the stream, but yeah, we're still going audio-wise.
My
phone just decided to power off.
Did your phone just decide to power off?
My phone just decided that it quit. My phone is a mother, actually, so it doesn't work on Mother's Day. So, yes.
Really? You had
to- Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday. It is May the 12th. It is Mother's Day, and this is Homegrown here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, and with me, as always, is that HDIC head dude in charge, Clinton Johnston. How you doing, my brother?
I am thrilled with the power that technology provides for us this morning.
Smart phones. Not necessarily smart people powering smartphones, but nevertheless, I persist. It's Mother's Day.
The phone asked you to stop.
It did.
The phone reminded you. And yet you persisted.
And yet I persisted. I have
Our apologies to all nasty women for co-opting that. For our joke.
Yeah, this is for y'all. Shout out to the women that are doing their things, holding it down. Shout out to all of the people who have not so healthy relationships with their mothers, but are just doing Mother's Day their own way. Shout out to them, too. That's why I didn't want to post pictures of my mother, you know. It's like posting pictures of your relationship on Facebook. Nobody wants to see all your happy stuff all the time.
There you go.
You know?
Thank you. I feel that.
Right?
I feel that.
You know?
That was considerate.
I try to be at all times, so. So, to all the moms everywhere out there doing their thing, whatever, do
to
you.
To all the moms we've loved before. Sorry, that was really.
Mother! We're just going to play all mothers.
Exactly. Song.
Dear Mama by Tupac Shakur is next. So, yeah, we just wanted to say that on behalf of Homegrown and on behalf of 94.7, I say love to all the moms. But let's keep this boat a-flowing.
Yeah, I say love to our first guest.
A-going. And we're going to look to our first lovely guest over here. How about you introduce yourself to the people of Homegrown, all of our listeners, all of our bevy of listeners. Say yourself.
Hi, I'm Morgan Smith with Oak Grove Theater in Verona, Virginia.
And I'm Jenny Howard, same, Verona, Virginia, Oak Grove Theater.
Awesome. And Oak Grove Theater is where in Virginia? I assume it's in Virginia, unless
yeah, tell
you guys
where Verona
an
is.
Incredibly long drive. No, I know where Verona is, but our listeners don't know where Verona is. So why don't you just explain a little bit about In Fair Verona, where you lay your scene.
It's a woodsy paradise nestled in a grove of oak trees. Mm. That's the fancy answer, but the literal answer...
It's in the Shenandoah Valley up 81.
Booyah.
Between Stanton
and Harrisonburg.
They're like Google Maps. Like, you know, I don't know what to tell y'all. But so... So tell us a little bit about your theater. I think the first thing that I've noticed that what you guys do is very interesting is that you guys work on a subscription-based program. And if you could explain that to our listeners, whoever wants to do it. Because usually people come in, they buy tickets, they sit down. But you guys, what you guys do is you have them buy all the tickets for all the seasons.
Yes, we offer 5 shows for the season, and it's $60 for the entire season, and you get to see all 5 shows. Any night you want to come, you come see your show. Mm-hmm. You can bring your out-of-town guests, and we do offer out-of-town guests at the gate.
Okay.
So you can. So you have a subscription. You come bring your friend. You're great. You picnic out there. You have dinner ahead of time. You can actually bring your beverages into
what? BYOB, y'all.
The only thing that we ask is that it is in plastic.
BYOPB.
Yes. Because that, you know, if you slip, fall, and it goes
absolutely.
Chunk down the stairs.
Yeah.
You know,
chunk. Yeah, exactly. Rather than chunk, crunch, smash. Ow. So This is an outdoor theater.
Yes.
Like completely, like the seating as well.
Like completely, like if it's gonna rain, we sometimes cancel, sometimes we don't. Sometimes you can sit in the audience with an umbrella.
Uh oh.
Mhm.
Cool. So what's on the menu for today? What's the season like for y'all this season?
Okay. Well, first up we have Rex's Exes. It is a sequel to Red Velvet Cake War. It's a rollicking comedy Texas romp. Very fun.
Why does that sound like a Three Stooges episode where they just throw red velvet cake at each other?
It's just plain fun. It's just
awesome.
Pure comedy. The second show is Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. So classic, you know.
I think I've heard of that one.
And I think that's a neat one because as an actress,
Alabama
I've
Johnson
never
wrote
seen
that.
It.
No, I'm just kidding.
Tennessee Johnson, I think.
Alaska Phillips. So.
I think Alabama Johnson wrote Cat on a Hot.
Well, they're rehearsing right now, and we're saying Cat on a Cold Tin Roof because we had a couple of very, very chilly rehearsals. But once the season gets going, it warms up, and we do suggest guests bring jackets in case it gets colder in the night. But
okay.
Just dress in layers.
Mm-hmm.
Third is Jesus Christ Superstar, which is an incredibly powerful musical with songs that'll just stick with you the whole night. It'll drive you nuts.
Yeah.
You won't be able to sleep. You'll be singing them. The fourth show is Calendar Girls, and would you call that a dramedy?
Yes.
So is that Calendar Girls? There was a movie called Calendar Girls?
Yes, it's based on a true story.
I see. What came first, the play or the movie?
Good question. I think the play, but I'm not certain.
I'm not sure.
But it's the same story.
Yes.
Ew.
Yes, it's some women in England who they're the husband of one of the women dies, and they decide they're going to make a calendar to raise money for the hospital where they'd spent so much time as he was ailing. And the only way to make a really good selling calendar is to show a little something. It's all good taste. It's all in good taste. It's a heartwarming story.
Yes.
Yeah. But you should talk about it more because you're the director.
Oh.
But I'll just say the fifth show,
okay,
so we can get through all of them. And then Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare. So,
oh my.
That intimidates some people. I think Midsummer's is one of the most accessible Shakespeare shows, and I know this director is going to do a lot of fun stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have an amazing variety this season. It's fun stuff, and it's so many meaty roles. Even the smaller roles in all of these shows have such meat to them. And there are no small roles, as we all know, because we're actors. But
still,
it's just neat that there's so much opportunity for folks to really just sink their teeth into some stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, so talk about the variety, because that's a large range of styles. Is that more of a range than you guys usually have? Because it feels like it is, and I wonder if the subscription... if the subscription model allows for you to program that broad a range of styles, because you already know that people are coming, right?
Yes, that's actually really true on that aspect of it. Because we have the subscription, because we know right out of the gate that we can do five shows, we've got five shows that we can be a little edgy on some, be traditional on others, and just really make a unique summer. So even if you only come to three of the shows, that's worth your $60 to come to three. Versus, you know, only being able to come to one or two and missing out. This way you know you've got your season planned. You know what you're going to do every day. And you can share your tickets. If you're unable to make a show, you can send your tickets with a guest. Well, there are no assigned seats. So what you get to do when you come to the Grove is you reserve your seats by 6:30. And then, you know, when you finish your dinner and you come to sit down by 8:45, there's your seat. It's right
cool.
there.
And I should point out, because I've been there a bunch of times and continue to go there, that it's gorgeous. I mean, Oak Grove is truth in advertising, right? It's this wonderful grove of trees. I mean, it's just sitting in the parking lot with the picnic tables and having your meal or having your wine and cheese or whatever. It's really nice. It's very relaxing. There are all of these trees around, and then the stage itself. I mean, you guys back right up to a farm behind you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just. Yeah.
It is beautiful. I have a. Something just came to my mind about how pretty it is. I was in a show a couple summers back, and I had an incredibly quick change that was going very wrong. So I wasn't sure my entire costume was on, and I had to enter. I entered the stage, and the entire audience went, "Ah!" And I thought, oh, no, did I forget my pants? Did I not button my shirt? And I spent the entire rest of that scene paranoid. Afterwards, when I talked to audience that I knew, they said an amazing shooting star went behind you wow. the second you entered. So there's there's that kind of beauty. There's the animals. There's the fort. There's the woods sounds. The sounds of the tree frogs and all sorts of things.
And also cars passing on the road and planes and it's outdoor theater.
It is. We had fireworks last year.
Nice. Is there a winery involved? I heard you say wine and cheese.
There's it, but you can bring your own wine.
You can just be your own winery. Right on. How long have y'all been doing this for? How long is
The theater's been since 1954, so this is the 63rd year.
Okay. And you guys have been board members since?
I have been a board member only for a couple of years, but I've been out there since the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a board member, but I've been there since 97.
Okay, cool. So, all right, well, let me ask the board member, talk about your play selection and what you guys look for. I mean, I see the variety in every season, but I guess specifically what you guys are looking for play-wise and subject-wise every season. Are you looking, because there are popular plays also sprinkled in with a little bit lesser known, more, socially...
socially relevant, socially challenging.
Yeah, I would say Calendar Girls is, a bit more socially eloquent. And say Jesus Christ Superstar, no matter even if the music is brilliant, I would think it just says a little bit more. But that's just me. So talk about how you select your plays for this particular venue.
We go in each season. Number one, we call out to the community and say, please submit shows. So we start there.
Okay.
Oh, really?
That makes sense.
Yes, we do put out a call for submissions. Our one requirement is that you've worked at the Grove before. That you know the vibe.
Right.
But that's as easy as coming and just working on a show the season before. That's great. We love you. We welcome you. We want all volunteers. But what we do to pick a show, pick a season, is we really look at the whole package. But we also think of not only the audience, which is aging, but we also need to keep in mind of getting the new people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want them to all age out of the seats. But we also think of our actors. Who's going to want to audition for that? Who are the majority of the actors in the Shenandoah Valley in our region? Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of women. So if you look at our season this year, we have a lot of really strong women's roles.
Hmm.
As a women's college graduate, I am an advocate of women's roles, so I always push that.
Here.
Mm-hmm. But we really look at the whole package. You have to see, well, what will fit X, Y, and Z?
Mm-hmm.
What's a good start to the season? It's always a comedy. You got to start with a comedy. You get them in. You get them big. They start talking about it. Closing the season can be a drama, but it's best to be a comedy because people are going, oh, well, school's starting. Do I really want to go see this one?
Mm.
So, for this year, Midsummer's was perfect.
Mm.
Everyone loves it. It's kid-friendly. You could bring your kids to it if you wanted to. It's just engaging. And, in fact, this season, this year, our director is using a lot of high school area kids. So it's not just... old people doing Shakespeare. It's young people doing Shakespeare.
Right on. Have you thought of, because you say it's a majority female, have you thought of plays like Role Reversal? Because I have seen a play with, Hamlet as a female and things about that nature. Have you thought of Role Reversals or flipping the script a little bit? Or do you keep it mostly traditional?
That's happening in Superstar, I think.
Oh.
I think.
Okay. We have done it before. We've had to do it before.
Okay.
We haven't go out of the gate that way,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes it's just necessary.
Right on.
And you also, of course, I'm a big stickler for this. You have to go by what the rights allow.
Right. Yeah. Certainly.
Now, Shakespeare, you can do.
Yeah.
But the and ones twist where around you get your rights and things, you have to go by what they allow.
Right on.
Which is something that our audience might not realize is that frequently when that one in order actually one thing that they might not realize is that in order to do a play just from the get-go, you have to apply for the right to do that play from a licensing agency. And frequently different plays will have different strictures depending on what you, how much you can do to, I mean, just about most plays don't allow you to change a whole lot. But there's some plays that are very, very, very strict about what they'll allow you to play. There's some plays that they don't, you know, if you cast a woman as a man, or if you change a non-essential character, there, no one's going to really blink twice. But then there are some that they do.
I think the neat thing about putting the call out to the community for what they want to direct is then those people come in with a passion. They know their script. They want to do it. And that's half the battle, is that you've got someone fully behind their project and excited to do it.
So you've got returning audience every year. Talk about your returning artist pool every year. How much are you seeing the same faces in artists? Is that a concern? Are you looking to try to pull new people into working at the Grove? What are your thoughts on that?
We're always looking to pull new people into the Grove. We want new people on stage. We want new people backstage. We want new people everywhere. Now, some of our actors are sells. I'm going to point at her and she's going to get irritated. But Jenny is one of our best actresses in the season. And every year.
Hardcore.
And people
Hardcore.
Come to see her. And people come to see Ben House Connect and Mike Vivada and names you recognize. But what's great is that we can put new people in shows with them. We can have new directors directing them. We can have new producers. We can have new costumers. We are, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, for example, is bringing in a lot of people who are experienced in the theater but have never worked at Oak Grove. So they are coming to work at the Oak Grove, and we are so excited to have them. Mm-hmm. And that breeds them to go, oh, well, maybe I want to do this show. Because we're an outdoor theater, some shows are so specific to outdoors and that are great there. So we can just, there are some shows you just want to do out there.
Right.
And I'm fairly certain, unless I'm forgetting someone going through my mind really quickly, there's at least three new people completely new to the Grove in the cast of Rex's Exes. I know there's at least two new to the Grove in Calendar Girls, lots new in Midsummers, and then new crew, too.
Yeah.
That's great. That's exciting.
That's awesome. Like, I feel really enlightened because I feel so stupid. I've never heard of the Oak Grove Theater until like this very day, until I know like you guys were coming on. So I guess what the next question is, be like, you know, just put out your all your social media like information for like auditions, play information, any type of info about Oak Grove Theater. Where would I find it? Where would I go?
Okay, the best place to find us is at www.oakgrovetheater.org. And that's where we've got all of our information. We do one audition time in March, so that's already done. We're cast for the whole season. But you will, we've got a mailing list, we've got everything, and you can just hook up with us on social media. All of it's on that website.
Cool.
Morgan, once again, for Charlottesville people, if they're just hearing about it now and they're thinking, oh, well, we didn't buy a subscription in time, they can still go.
Yes.
Because they're from out of town.
Yes, and seasons are still available. Just say that you know Morgan at the door. And I'm the only one.
That's so. Actually what I say at every event I go to. Yeah, I know Morgan. We're cool. And then I just walk right through.
Yo, I know Morgan.
Get you
me and
in
Morgan, we tight.
Yep.
Tight.
Yeah. There's Morgan right there. Morgan! All right. Morgan Smith, Jenny Howard, thank you very so much. Thank you very so much.
Thank you
so much. So very much for coming to Homegrown here this wonderful Mother's Day. Clinton, we're going to do a drop and then come back with our next guest?
Yes, indeed.
All right. I'm going to work on my diction and then we're going to do that. This is Homegrown. Drop!
18 minutes. Wait a minute. 19 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Charlottesville.
Do you realize there's another Charlottesville in the U.S.?
No way.
Yeah, I think.
There is only one Charlottesville. We're like Highlander. There can only be
like,
one.
I think it's Indiana. I think there's a Charlottesville,
Indiana.
Oh, screw Indiana.
They breeded people like Mike Pence into this world. Oh my God.
Mike Pence mother FCCers.
Let's move on before we go off on a horrible tangent. Yeah. Devin Sproul is in the MoFo studio.
Here at Homegrown, Charlottesville's finest.
Devin, thank you so much for coming out here.
It's great to be here.
And I don't think Devin realizes this, but me and Devin actually were in, we were in the same choral group in high school.
What?
Yeah. That year. I think not chorale, but the one below it or something like that.
What is it called?
Yeah, you were the ropes.
Women's chorus, probably.
Yeah. You were in women's chorus with a whole bunch of my friends and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Amazing.
You don't remember. It's okay, though.
It's kind of coming back to me. I dropped out of school not long after that and was sort of traumatized by not being able to continue playing in choir.
Right, because you were really good at it. You got a lot of love. You got a lot of love from Miss Porter. I remember that.
I just found an old journal complaining about her.
She loved you, though. And then you took that wonderful vocal talent and then you made it into a career. And aww, for the past 20 years or so.
What about you?
Me?
Yeah.
I haven't been doing nothing with my life.
Well, you're some vocal talent here.
No, yeah. I mean that, but you know, it's up and down. It's up and down. Mm-hmm. It's not about me. I'm the host. It's about you. We have limited time. The Gold String just came out. The CD release party is at Front Porch Roots Music School on May 20th. Mm-hmm. And I just listened to this album and it's dope. It's a little bit unusual from the stuff that you've done before, but there's a lot of, like, I would say, like, your old stuff. The big word that I got from it is warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like either from sunlight or within or openness, because you usually have that natural quality, and I think that comes from Charlottesville, like just being in the atmosphere of, like, the trees and, you know, of that naturalistic quality. But you do a little bit of experimental, like, electronic stuff on that. There's this part in track two, my favorite track, where you do this. And yeah, I love that. I love that. And you got the R2-D2 thing and the end of track. That's super.
On the Moog, what's the little one? Like the, they sold him at Radio Shack. It's a little synthesizer.
Oh, the Moog synthesizer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah, I forget which one he's, yeah, man.
Yeah, so talk about that. Talk about, you know, sure. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So the record's called The Gold String, and I did write a lot of it here. I recorded it in Canada, originally from Canada, although by birth Canada, by life Virginia. And so I have these friends in this kind of experimental, I don't know, sort of jazz, sort of R&B band called Bernice, and they're based in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And I toured with them with these songs and ended up way on the east coast of Canada, south of Halifax in Nova Scotia, and we recorded the kind of bass tracks for The Gold String there. So there's a lot of, like, a lot of the kind of unusual guitar playing. It's my friend Tom Gill.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Because
there
Canadian?
Are some. Well, no, that they're an experimental.
Oh, yeah.
Of, because there are a lot of really interesting tonal shifts going on.
Yep.
There are a lot.
Totally.
I mean it's such a quiet album that it's easy to miss that. But once you sit there and listen to it, it's like one of those pictures of gas behind glass, where it's all moving slowly, so it's kind of calm. But when you look at it, there's all of this roiling and turning and all of this dynamic stuff going on.
That's beautiful. That's how I'm going to describe it from now on. Thanks,
Quentin. No. But it's true. That's kind of how I have it. I have ethereal. Oh. I have light. I have flowy. Yeah. I write adjectives.
They're so deep groove oriented to this group. They're just like the drummer, when you watch him play, he's just like his face almost looks like it's pain. He's like painfully in the groove. Mm-hmm. It's really a joy to play with him. And then I brought that back to Paul, my husband, who we live here in Charlottesville, and we have this room used to be filled with guitars, and now he doesn't play guitar anymore. He plays keyboards and synthesizers, so now it's filled with synthesizers and keyboards, and so we played
that sounds amazing
those
actually.
on that. So it's got this,
I don't know. He also is very melodic, groove, repetitive oriented, but has this weird tweaky part of himself that that they do also. So
can I just say you can definitely determine the caliber of a musician by the sex face that he makes when he's playing his solo. When he's just doing that. Who's the guy that jams with Eric Clapton? Robert Black Eye. Robert.
Oh, Robert Cray.
What's his last name?
Yeah. Robert Cray.
Yeah, great sex face. Great sex face when he solos.
Sex face.
Yeah.
A good one too.
Yeah. I think I saw that meme too. Yeah, that's dope.
It's either great or really awful to watch. Depends on what it sounds like. Sorry.
You were about to say something.
Well, I was going to say a couple things. One, I love that you're using the word groove because when I was listening to, and I hope you won't mind if I compare it with somebody else, because I thought about Amy Mann
and
some of her work, but
that's
the big difference was that I must admit, and you know don't hate, I must admit sometimes I find Amy Mann a bit impenetrable for me. It's hard for me to hook into her, a big difference is that there was a groove,
right.
And it's strange for me to use that term because it's not like it's funky music. It's not like it's, but there's a definite, like your songs would just hit a groove and it was
it can be slow, it can be mellow, and it could not be all played. Even if you're feeling a groove, you don't have to actually play each of those sort of beats to feel it, and that's what I really. I guess when I'm performing,
the good negative nights, space groove.
Totally.
Oh,
the good nights are when the song is just happening, and you're playing whatever part of the song you want to. And the hard nights are when you're like pushing the song up the hill, and if you even let go for a second, it just
like Atlas.
Gets out of control. So
I want to ask really quickly because we won't have time to play some of a bit
sure,
of a track.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Let's do that. Let's just because we've been talking about it. All right. So this is Trees at Your Mom from The Gold String.
Leaves in the fall on the trees outside your mom.
Trees at Your Mom from Devin Sproul's new CD, The Gold String.
For moms everywhere.
For moms everywhere.
And that brings us to a wonderful and lovely subject. You are actually a new mother, and this is your first Mother's Day.
Yeah.
You have an 8-year-old daughter?
Month old, yeah.
Okay. Yep. How is...
Months, years.
You know, it's all the same.
I haven't celebrated until now, but I'm just saving it up.
How has that affected particularly this album and your songwriting as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can feel actually, that warmth of motherhood in there, almost like you were... Were you expecting pregnant? during the session?
And to piggyback on that question, going into this album, did you have an entire vision for the album as a whole? Did you say, oh, I've just got a bunch of these songs, mm-hmm. I need a receptacle of them?
Yeah.
What is the gold thread
going through them. So a lot of them mention a gold string or a gold thread. Yeah, a lot of them talk about this kind of spiritual connection between living things or loving things, and you know, none of this is very original, but the, you know, trying to put it into words and into lyrics. I was pregnant a couple times, once that worked leading up to this daughter I have.
Okay.
And that was, so yes, I was, that was a big part of the tour that I was on when we recorded this. So on a tour, recorded what became the Gold String, and one night at this wonderful studio called the Old Confidence Lodge in Nova Scotia, and then ended up having it's been a long couple of years. I was just sitting out there on your very comfortable couch.
It is a nice couch.
At something my husband posted, which was a picture of our dog on a beach, and he said 2 years ago today, Devin told me she wanted to have Ray. Ray is the name of our daughter.
Mm.
And it's been 2 years since we were like, all right, let's try to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
It's a crazy process. But the thing that's been nice is not just wearing this hat, this artist hat, and mm-hmm. not needing to bring music and art back wearing all these different hats. So I've been wearing this mom hat, and I've been, you know, wearing my music hat, and I've also been working a little. I've taken on some shifts at this place where my husband works called Wine and Design, which is like social mm-hmm. drinking and painting, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just been fun sort of, I'm sure you guys have encountered this, people with this artist identity that they can't kind of get out from under. And it kind of can be a little cruel sometimes because mm-hmm. of the ups and downs of business and the... Yeah. ups and downs of creativity mm-hmm. and feeling creative. So I guess the shedding a little of that.
I think that's actually perfectly described in track 5, which is called Drawing Circles, because it does have that childlike quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reminiscent of your old stuff. It's kind of mm-hmm. got like that smoky room, mm-hmm. like something you would hear at Miller's, mm-hmm. like, you know, back in the day,
yeah.
But there's still like, there is like an insouciance and like a wanderlust mm. about it.
Mm.
And yeah, it just kind of like blends like all of the stuff, the new stuff and the old stuff you've been doing kind of all together. And that's kind of why I noticed like both 5 and 6 in the middle of the album kind of like encapsulate kind of like the whole of what you've been doing. And it seems like you new stuff, everything I've been doing. And it kind of goes back into the dream and old. And I kind of had at the end, like either sliding into sleep or waking up from a dream.
Totally,
and that's how I kind of feel it. So,
I'm
just really amazed and really intrigued by this album. Yeah. I just think it's a really great job. So what's next on the plate? You just hanging out with Ray and Paul and just keeping it chill for now?
I mean, I wouldn't call it chill, but I would say hanging out with Paul and Ray is what I'm doing.
Right on.
Still up in the night a bit, still, you know, up in the day. It is really hard work. And we're not like spring chickens in terms of parent ages. He's 40, mm-hmm. almost, no, 41, and I'm 35. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's... I'm getting some grays, but yeah, that's what I'm doing.
No plans to tour this album, or does having Ray make that difficult?
Shows here and there. Ray and I went to England together for 2.5 weeks, and that was our big tour, and it was exhausting and victorious and amazing. I had a great band that really helped co-parent her basically for those weeks. And that it was pretty rock and roll. We loved it. And now we're taking it easy. Going to enjoy the summer. We have 2 young cousins here in town, her age-ish, but within a year. So just kind of getting our feet under us. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you have a CD release concert coming up.
I do, yeah. Thanks for mentioning it. It's 5/20 this month, a week from yesterday, May 20th, Saturday at the Front Porch, which is this amazing roots music school. I mean, it's roots, I would say loosely, because I teach there. I teach songwriting, lots of weird young songwriters.
Because we've had people from the Front Porch on the show.
That's awesome.
Ago.
Thanks for supporting it. It's just an amazing, like when you go and you hear people there, you're like, oh yeah, this is kids having a good time learning an instrument. This is not a grueling, you know, straight scale practice.
Do the arpeggios.
Do practice scales there, but there's a lot of folk singing, a lot of, you know, dancing, a lot of, you know, I have one girl who doesn't really like to sing, and she plays guitar all right, but so far we're just creating garage band loops, and she just...
It sounds like it's focused more on the creative rather than the mechanical aspect.
Oh, totally. So anyway, we're doing it there. It's right downtown. It's on Saturday, and the best thing about it is the opening set is by my students. So
oh, really?
So my young songwriters are opening. And the ones that are too shy, I'm going to play one of their songs. So it's going to be an awesome opening set.
I just imagine Ray there with a tiny guitar.
Bing, bing, bing. I'd love to have her there. I wish she would.
She'll be there.
Yeah.
Well, she'll be there.
In spirit, if not in sleep.
Devin Sproul, we are more than grateful to have you at our studio, and hopefully you can do this again.
Thank you.
At some other time.
Nice to see you both again.
Yeah.
Outside a choir.
Right on. Yeah.
Amazing.
Shout out to Ms.
I think it's coming back.
Shout out to choir. Look at it. You never know.
No, it's okay. I know what we both did during high school, so memories are a bit fogged. Devin, thank you again.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right. So I guess we got to do this commercial thing. Are we doing ads? We doing commercials?
We should do what's coming up.
Okay. Here's what's coming up. Here in Charlottesville, currently running now through June 11th, it's American Shakespeare Center Spring Season featuring Two Gentlemen of Verona and Romeo and Juliet by Shakespeare, and also Thornton Wilder's Our Town and Anne-Marie MacDonald's Goodnight Desdemona, Good Morning Juliet, at the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton. Last Chance, Wedekind Spring Awakening at Guerrilla Theater is happening tonight at 6 o'clock, currently running now through May 21st. First, Blythe Spirit at Four County Players, currently running now through the 28th, is Title of Show, the inaugural production of Phoenix Theater Works at the Belmont Arts Collective. Today, Crozet Arts and Crafts Festival at Claudius Crozet Park. May 16th, the Fraylin Art Museum offers Babes in Artland for adult caregivers of infants 18 months and younger. Bring your baby to join fellow parents for lively conversations about works of art. May 18th, Big Blue Door Improv Night in Seville Coffee. May 19th, the Bridge PAI Charlottesville Reading Series continues. This week, fiction writer Amanda Corman and poet Ross White read from their works. May 20th is a guided tour of Indigenous or Australian art at the Kluge Roo Aboriginal Arts Collection. May 20th is the Pop-Up Artist Salon at Second Street Gallery from noon to 5. Listen to last week's show for details. And May 20th is the Mind Body Project presents the Embodied Storytelling Project, teaching you how to relax and recharge by using mental and physical storytelling frameworks at the Yellow Door.
Aww.
And your music options this week.
Oh, hand that over. Hand that over.
My bad.
Hand off. Music options this week, this afternoon, my man Peyton Tochterman at Glasshouse Winery at 2 p.m. Tonight, UVA's McIntyre Department of Music and Bridge PAI present the fourth installment of the Telemetry Music Series free at the Bridge PAI. Tonight, it's Curved Light, Travis Thatcher, Molasses, and Ghost Fortune. Also tonight, King Golden Banshee at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. May 16th, Tony LaRocco at the Anteroom. May 17th, Matthew McAllister and Will Overman play the Second Street Gallery's latest Brews with a View. Skip Haga's over at Dirty Nelly's. On May 18th, Front Porch Music School presents its latest Seville Hoedown, where you can contra dance to live music. Contra dance together. May 18th, Will Leggett and Friends at the Whiskey Jar, the Michael Ellswick Gathering, and Nick and Stephen Pollock at Fellini's. Midlife Crisis at Dirty Nelly's, a new entry in my favorite band name list, Midlife Crisis. Also on May 19th, Born Crooked, Laying Down the Blues at the Villa Sports Bar in the Ultra Lounge, and also the Sally Rose Band at the Glasshouse Winery in Jazz with Adam Larrabee Quartet at Fellini's. May 19th, also Choose Your Own Adventure at the Whiskey Jar. May 20th, Mojo Pie, our people at Mojo Pie and Albemarle Cider Works, Evan Mook at Fellini's, Spidel, Goodrich, and Goggin at the Batesville Market. There's some Charlottesville old school. Of course, Devin Spall's release party.
Woo-hoo!
The Michael Coleman Band at the Pro Reynado Farm Brewery and the Gladstones at Dirty Nelly's every Monday. It's Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday,
Jazz Collective at number 9 at Fellini's, the open mic night at Pro Reynado Farms Brewery. Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner every Thursday. John Dearth Quintet breaking it down at Miller's. And if you're just tuning in right now, it is 39 minutes past the hour. This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPBC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned for after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Their guest is Rick's mom and more. Shout out to Rick's mom talking about Mother's Day and parenting. Awesome.
Boom! 40 minutes past the hour. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Homegrown, your show about local art. Hey, David, let's go to our next guest. 40 minutes past the hour. And now it's time for our next guest coming at us here from Live Arts, that little theater. That little theater in town.
That small, minuscule theater.
That small. Not
just,
many people
just
heard
getting
of it.
By. Just getting by here in the town of Seaville.
Eventually, they'll get some.
Donate
some
to Live Arts if you can.
People, come on. They're, we're on the struggling. Big stage over there.
My man, Bill Roth. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great, Clinton. Good to see you, my friend.
Welcome to our show for the first time there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And full disclosure, Bill and I have known each other for years and years and years and years. I have respected him for that long. I don't know if he's respected me. I'm afraid to ask. I'm afraid to ask. Bill, you brought somebody with you. Who might that be?
I did. This is the assistant director for Death of a Salesman. That's the play we're doing.
Oh, you just
Kelly Vandilla.
Right out of the bag.
Kelly Vandilla.
How's it going, Kelly?
It's going very well. This is my first radio interview. Thank you very much.
And so far, you're doing great.
It's easy.
So, Live Arts, Death of a Salesman. First thing I've got to ask is, just to clear some stuff up, weren't we supposed to be getting some Wild right
some
now?
Some Wild?
Yeah, wasn't...
There was an Oscar Wilde play scheduled, and for one reason or another, it was... they actually got started on it and were working on it, and then it was decided maybe it's the wrong time of year, or maybe it's not going to work this time, and we ought to aim for something else. So I got a phone call, and they happened to know over there that I'm a longtime fan of Death of a Salesman. I've been trying to get an opportunity to direct it for... golly, probably 20, 30 years now. And so they found that on a list, and the phone rang.
And that's a play, right? Death of a Salesman?
That is a play. It's a very classic American play. You may have heard of it.
It's just once or twice.
Or five,
Salesman.
Or nine.
I'm just kidding. It's one of the probably the most famous American play of all time.
And I think it's probably one of the greatest American plays of all time. I mean, For me personally, when I first encountered Death of a Salesman, it was one of the most important theater experiences of my life.
Well, continue my thought and interject if I'm in any sense reaching or incorrect, but it kind of encapsulates the idea of the American dream, how people perceive success as one thing. And like a brass ring, they reach for it and try to grasp, and they can't get it, and that which leads to depression and resentment and family destruction. And in a way, it kind of embodies American families,
David,
as a whole.
You're a genius. You just negated the whole reason to have us on the show here.
This
that
is
was wonderful,
grown, baby.
That was wonderful.
We play at the higher level here.
Are you? I read a little.
Are you a dramaturg by chance?
I am. No. You know what? I am. I
I do drama. I know how to feel, and I know how to study characters and analyze the script. I'm not a dramaturg. I'm not really. I don't know a lot of plays. Like, I do not have the encyclopedic knowledge that my boy Clinton Johnson does. But I love plays, and I love to read more about the plays that I do know, and I do love to catch more plays. So I'm starting to become a dramaturg, but just more just an enthusiast of the craft itself.
And an actor, are you as well?
Yes.
So you were in Fences?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, come over to Live Arts and do some more acting.
Yeah, my director was pretty good, too. So
yeah, I heard.
One of
the problems with having the opportunity to direct a play is you don't get to see other plays while you're doing it.
Indeed.
So I was sorry to miss it. Heard fine things about it.
Oh, well, good.
And you're like the 80th person this week to come up to me and tell me that. So I really appreciate that and all the love that's been going up with Fences. But let's talk about your production. So as African-Americans, as actors, we heard down the pipeline that Death of a Salesman was going up soon. And they were going to do similar to what the Othello production of Four County was kind of blacken it up, black and tan, as we like to call it.
A little Death of a Latte.
Right. but it's not extensively all African American. No, it's
It's not red states and white states or blue states. It's the American states kind of thing. It's a mix, and it was a mix because this is a mixed community, and there's no reason why New York would not have also been a mixed community in 1947. It would have been a rare friendship, surely, between Willie Loman's neighbor, Charlie, and Willie, but they grew up together. And I didn't see any reason why we couldn't mix it up a little and speak to the entire community here instead of...
Absolutely.
Yeah. So...
There you go. Yeah. In fact, I think it's certainly a question that everyone who's casting these days, at least everyone who's casting these days who has an ounce of imagination and a glimmer of responsibility... A glimpse at what the world is now as opposed to what the world used to be, these are things that they have to deal with. Questions of, you know, how much do you strictly cast based on realism, and how much do you cast based on reality? That is to say, current reality.
Right. I think that's a fair assessment, yeah. Now, we haven't done sort of blind casting the way a lot of folks are doing now, but we have cast the next door neighbor and his son as African American, and I think it works beautifully.
Great. So the audiences are not supposed to, pretend that these black actors are playing white characters. These black actors are playing black characters.
That's true. Although there's no reference one way or the other.
I like that concept actually.
That his friend
Charlie, and not just that his friend Charlie, but also that his friend Bernard, that his son, because his Bernard is the son, right?
Bernard is the son.
That his son Bernard is African American. That adds some really interesting layers to it, considering the unspoken, or not the unspoken, but the actual rivalry between Biff and Bernard. Right?
It does. And we have some fine actors playing them, too. And we have a third man in the role of the restaurant that we're enjoying very much. Cool. Want to talk about...
We have the wonderful Ernest, who is playing the role of Stanley, and though it is what one might consider a bit part, it does have some really nice dialogue and interactions and relationships, and it further expands this idea of speaking to our entire community with this production. We're not trying to be high and lofty and speak to necessarily the whole world or the whole state of theater or all of America, but really to be involved in this community, which fits in with the nature and direction and mission of Live Arts. So we're just happy to be involved with as many different people as we can.
And that's Ernest Chambers, and Ernest is another thing we're trying to work hard on in this production, along with some of the other characters, and that is life, and even when it's a severe, tragedy, which people have over the years since this was written in 1947 made the case for, life also has its humor in it, and we don't survive without humor, even in the tragic situations. You couldn't have... you couldn't have a war without having the MASH kind of humor that goes with it. And you can't have personal tragedies without finding humor to get you by from day to day. So we've been trying to very hard to include some good laughs in the show that may be unexpected from people who've heard rumors about the death of the salesman kind of thing. It's much more about the life of the salesman and all of our lives today.
See, that's an interesting thing about Arthur Miller. The thing that makes him so valuable and also the thing that makes him so difficult is that he can be kind of resistant to initial artistic penetration, but once you get into him, there's so many choices that he offers you in terms of interpretation, in terms of tone. You can do a lot with him, and at the same time, it's really easy to get off the skids and make what we call bold and unfortunate choices. But you've been dealing with Miller for a while.
I have, and actually I've seen all four of the Broadway productions of this, and the off-Broadway one in 1975 with George C. Scott.
Wait, when you say all four, do you mean the original one with wasn't Lee Marvin?
No, it was Lee J. Cobb.
Lee J. Cobb.
Yeah, but I saw it on film, I'll confess.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, but the others, the
Don't
other
tease
three,
me
I've
like
seen.
That, Bill. Don't tease
the
me.
The other
Bill.
Three I'm I've seen out. Live. I remember going to the George C. George C. Scott one in 75, I think it was somewhere in there, and being wowed by it. I remember being wowed by it for some reason in high school, although God knows why, because it was the inaccessible modern play that we were all supposed to read then. And I thought, oh, okay, well, it's about this old guy who things didn't work out for. But it's then I wanted, of course, to play Bernard, and then I wanted to play Happy and Biff and Charlie, and finally for the last 10 years or so I've been saying, why hasn't anybody called me sometime to do Willie in Death of a Salesman? So I've adored this play for a long time because of its contradictions. Well, two things, I think. One, it's about a father and son, and it's about two fathers and sons, as we know. But it's primarily about the relationship between Biff and Willie. And it's very contentious. And most of us will recall from our own growing up, there's always a bone of contention from one generation to another. And the next generation has to somehow figure out their own lives, no matter what their fathers intend for them to be when they, quote unquote, grow up. So it's that relationship that interests me, the father-son thing. I had my own difficulties with my dad, and we never did get to talk as much as I hoped we would. And the other thing that it's about is lies and contradictions. Yeah, and that's why there are so many different ways to do this play, because Willie, primarily Willie, but also Biff, his son, main oldest son, are so good at creating alternate realities for themselves, like we all have to do from time to time. But they're good at saying, this is my reality. This is what I'm doing right now. This is the real thing. And just ask me and I'll tell you what the real truth is, along the lines of what you just mentioned, realism and reality. Right. And the rest of us can say, well, it may be your reality, buddy, but it ain't mine right now. And the audience is seeing, I think, a familiar aspect of the way we fool ourselves into leading what we believe are far more productive lives than they might really be.
David, are you getting deja vu listening to this?
I'm very much so. We also joked two things, one leading into the other. We often joked on the, you know, in the rehearsals and fences that was the Black Death of a Salesman, how Troy was, you know, an innate jerk, how, you know, he lied about, you know, locking up his own brother and, you know, getting his son kicked off the football team and, you know, credit, you know, lied about everything. But for some reason, you know, the audience gravitated to him. They sympathized with him. And it's just, he's just a rich, layered character with so much, with so much that he wants to do with his life. Mm-hmm. So you respect that from him. But at the same time, yeah, it's kind of rough. And I also wanted to ask you, we have 3 minutes, so I just wanted to get this out quick. Is there any, was there any motivation or impetus from you about the current state of America that that gravitated you into doing this play now, the alternate realities that you speak of, how perception of reality is judged as being more important than reality itself, said Ivanka Trump herself. You know,
I knew you wouldn't resist.
Well, I mean, it's out there. It's out there, Bill. So,
did she say that in her book?
In her book, bro.
Oh, that's right.
But also, again, the idea of success. This person that people perceive to be successful when in fact he's lost more money than
he's gained. Yeah, Dave, I see what you're getting at. Okay. I have to say, since I just claimed to be in love with this play for 30 years. I've been trying to get Live Arts to be interested in this play for at least 20 years now, mm-hmm. since I've been involved with Live Arts. So it's not the current political situation that moves me, but, big, big but, for the last 20 years, it has been applicable to the current political situation. It's really, universal a piece.
I would say since Reagan. I would say since this idea of decadence and like of status and wealth, you know, judging you as a person and not your qualities and not your character, but the things that you have and the things that you can do for people. I think the idea of success, American success, has been twisted since the 80s.
I couldn't agree with you more. But
up to this point.
But it was pretty twisted back in the time of Andrew Jackson, and it's gotten twisted way. The American dream, which is what the play is all about, has always been about where is it? Hmm. Where is this dream that we imagine to be? And it's not always been there for everybody, and everybody knows that, and everybody ignores that. But it's nothing really new, I don't think. The dream is worth having. I think the American dream is worth having and worth continuing to put up in front of us. But we also have to acknowledge there's an awful lot of people that don't even know what that word means. Mm. Or they do know what the word dream means. They do know what it should be. But some people don't have a prayer of getting it, or even close to it, even though they believe they will, as does Willie and the whole family.
Right on. Bill, Kelly, thank you so much. This conversation could have gone on.
Oh my God,
it so could have gone on.
Bill, I could listen to you read the phone book. I mean, it's the gravitas just oozes. And yes, anytime you want to come back or just talk personally, I just want to pick your brain. You know, as an actor.
Give us the what, where, and when for Death of a Salesman for people.
Right on.
Opening Friday the 20th of May and playing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at... No, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8, Thursdays at 7:30, Sundays at 3 o'clock, and we're playing through June 4th.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kelly.
Only 2 weekends?
Three weekends, two weeks. With the 2 weeks in between.
Leaves in the fall on the trees outside your mom's. Can't be improved.
Okay. This is great. All right, David.
That's our show.
That is our show. What's going on? What's Sunday morning wake-up call about? What's going on with that?
Stay tuned. Thank you for tuning in to us. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Coming up next, of course, it's the wake-up call, the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. And this week, his guest is his mom and more. I'm talking about Mother's Day and parenting. This has been Homegrown, of course. We'd like to thank our guests, Morgan Smith and Jenny Howard from Oak Grove Theater. Go check them out. Theater outside, Theater under the stars, playing outdoors for ever and ever and ever and ever. Devin Sprawl coming in, talking about her new CD, The Gold String.
It's great.
Catch that CD and catch the CD opening party. And, of course, Bill Ruff and Kelly DeVilla from Live Arts. the only place where the arts are live.
Two things.
Charlottesville.
Two things before I leave. Donate money to the Black Mama's Day bailout. It goes to money that helps incarcerated mothers get out on bail so they can be with their families for Mother's Day. So donate to that. Website is on Song, Southerners and New Ground. And happy Mother's Day to my mother, Denise, that I'm making lunch for right after the show. I love you very much. And this is Homegrown. I love you too, Clinton, even though you're not a mother.
You know, I think many people have called me a mother before.
But I love your mother for having you. This is Homegrown. We love you guys. Peace.
Peace.
Visible stars.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.